And now you know that. I want to focus on something that's at the beginning of our chapter, which is the sixth chapter. And the truth is that the material at the beginning of the sixth chapter, as I pointed out when we started learning it a couple of days ago, really much of it belongs much earlier in the Masechet, because the lottery already happened. And now the Mishnah wants to focus on the circumstance. We dealt with this today in Shir. The circumstance that happens if after the lottery, somewhere in the middle of the process, one of the animals dies or something else messes up the korban, what do? You do another lottery. You don't do another lottery. You just bring another replacement animal like Reb Shimon. You do another lottery. At what point do you start? That's why it's here. But it mentions a halakha, which is most unusual. And we're going to spend some time on of the shir focusing on that halakha, which is of the makeup of these two goats, right? And there's two things that happen with these two goats that happen elsewhere in the Torah, but never together. There's two requirements or two processes that happen with these goats. And one of the processes is something happens elsewhere in the Torah, and the other process happens elsewhere in the Torah, but they never meet. So we got to figure out what these processes are, and then why they come together in this single case. So let's take a look at it. Here's the text. Umi'eta dat b'nei Yisrael, the Kohen Gadol, has to offer his own bring his own paranayel. And from b'nei Yisrael, yikach shnei si'irei izim lechatat. Right? Two goats, male goats, as a chatat. V'ayel echad le'ola. Now, just parenthetically to note, I put the word lechatat in green. You'll notice the grammar is a little awkward, because what should it say? Shnei sirei zim le. It should say lechataot. Plural. Instead of lechatat, singular, we're going to come back to that. Vayel chad leola. Good.
It's one unit, no?
What?
It's one unit.
It's one unit, but even when you have a unit, you still refer to them as plural. All right?
Unless it's an adjective. To korban chatat.
Le chatat. Good. I agreed. It is an adjective. It is the korban chatat. It's a modifier. What kind of korban is it? But the you're right that it's creating a unit out of these two. All right. The unit is the unit of a chatat. What's odd about this is that these two, as we know, are not going to have the same fate. They're going to have nearly opposite fates. The only thing they have in common is they're going to die. One is going to go, the dam, to a place that very few korbanot go, only this and the par of, you know, the Kohen Gadol. And the other one's going to go all the way out in the desert and get thrown off the cliff. But they're still described as a unit. So we have to see what that's about. That's the first vidui that Aharon does. Then, he takes the two goats that are alive. He puts a lottery on them, if you will. So one of them says or means or implies Lashem, and the other one is Lazazel. What is Lazazel is, my teacher, Professor Yoel Elitzur, wrote an article on where his identification of the location of Lazazel. If anybody's interested, I'll try to dig it up and send it to you. But we know that it means going to be sent away. Then Aharon brings the Seir that had Hashem come on it and makes it a Chatat. But wait a second, weren't they both a Chatat? And the one that had Lazazel is going to be stood up alive before Hashem. To send it out to Azazel. Now you notice I've got all sorts of weird colors going on here, and they'll only become clear throughout the Shir. What's the shalach marked as, and goral is marked as, and sa'ir? Okay, we're gonna have where that's where we're gonna go now.
So this, the second sa'ir is unchatated.
It seems to be correct. It seems to be that chatat no longer applies to it, yeah. And we never refer to it that way. We talk about it as the sa'ir lazazel or sa'ir hamishtaleach. We never refer to it as a chatat chitzona or something. Correct. That's so. Like, what's going on with this identification of chatat? Is it both of them? Is it only one of them? Is it potentially either one? But then after the Agrala, we know which one it is. What do we do with that? Okay, so the shorter part that I want to deal with is Goral. A Goral, which it could be translated as a lottery, but isn't only a lottery, as you'll see, is a word that is used in several passages in Tanakh. We're not doing all of them. We're doing the main ones. In Chumash, Goral shows up in one other context, and that is the context of dividing the land. Coming up in a couple of weeks, at the end of Sefer Bamidbar in Pinchas, actually, in 2 weeks from now, at the end of the census, we have the phrase, Ach b'goral yechaleka ta'aretz, in source 2, lishmot matoto otam yinchalu. So the land should be divided up by Goral, al piha Goral techalek nachlato ben rav lima'at. Now, does that mean that the land is going to be divided up by a roll of the dice, and whoever gets lucky is going to get the dice that point them towards the mountains of the Galil or whatever it might be? Or does it mean something else is going on? We don't know. And the truth is, we're not going to know. But let's think about how this Goral is different than the Goral in Yom Kippur. What's the Goral on Yom Kippur doing? It's taking two animals and doing what?
Choosing their fate.
Yes, but it's also matching them, because the two animals have two fates, and identifying which one gets which fate. Now, you could say the same thing about the land, and you could say there's 12 plots of land and 12 tribes as matching them, but you can hardly say the same about a lottery between two, which is a dichotomy, and which is a binary choice, as opposed to a lottery of the land. A lottery of the land seems to be much more of an open-ended piece, where you're being given your allotted land. But let's leave that aside for a second, because there are three other very famous Goralot, two famous and one not as famous, that show up in Tanakh. Perhaps the most famous one is in source 4. We'll get to that in a minute. In Yonah, in the first chapter of Yonah, Yonah's on the boat, and there's a terrible storm, and everybody's crying out to their God, and all HE double matchsticks is breaking loose. And the sailors, who are, by the way, presented in the most virtuous of images here in Perek Aleph, even though they're idolaters, after the captain finds out, or at least sends the Yonah's not doing his part because he's sleeping while it's all going on, they Vinapila Goralot, right? They said, let's throw down Goralot. We'll find out who is the guilty one. Now, this is very different than the land, and it may be very different than the goats, because here the Goral is actually a device, not of matching you to your fate, but rather identifying from a group the single oddball. Who's the oddball here? Who's the one who's angered his God, who's then created this storm for us? Right? And by Yapilu Goralot, by Yipol HaGoral al Yonah. And they throw down the Goralot, and the Goral falls down on Yonah. Now, the most famous Goral in history undoubtedly is Haman's. The whole holiday is called the Feast of Lots because it's called Purim, and Pur is a Goral. We have it here in the text. B'chodesh harishon u'chodesh nisan mishnat shtei mishel ha'achashverosh hipil pur hu ha'goral. He threw down a pur, which is a goral. Why does it say that? Because the Hebrew-speaking audience doesn't speak ancient Farsi. They don't know what a pur is. They know the holiday is called Purim. They don't know why. So the text translates for us, pur hu ha'goral lifnei Haman. Now, what was this goral doing? This goral was not saying, okay, I got five nations, 5 days. Which day should I destroy which nation? It wasn't doing like that. It was saying, there's one nation I want to destroy. What's the best day in the year, or the best month, really, in the year to do it? And this is much closer to Yonah, in that we're singling out the one bad guy, if you will. Right? Now, it's used in a poetic sense in Sefer Yoel, in the beginning of the last chapter, when it talks about the evil doings of our enemies, because there's going to be a day of judgment in Emek Yehoshaphat. And one of the things that the enemies are accused of doing is vel ami yadu goral. They threw down, yadu is kind of similar to lapil. They threw down a goral, and then what happened? Vayitnu hayeled bazona vayeldam achru bayayin vayishtu. They would then sell a boy off for pederasty, and a girl they would sell for wine. In other words, they would take lots out on their captives, the Jewish captives that they had, to see which one would get to, would be sold into slavery or worse. All right, so here we have, again, these three goralot, which are identifying, in two cases, people, and in one case, a date, are, again, not a matching thing, but rather about identifying the one thing that we want, or in some cases, the one thing that we'd rather not find. Now, the truth is that some things like that happen elsewhere in Tanakh without being called a goral. And I'll give you three famous cases that happen in Nevi'im Rishonim. One of them is that after Bnei Yisrael steamroll over Yericho, they come to battle Ha'ai, and they are defeated at Ha'ai. And it is a cataclysmic catastrophe because Yehoshua falls on his face. You get an image of Tachnun there. And why did you bring us across the Yarden to be killed? All the nations are going to, right? Terrible. And God says, listen, get up and fix the sin. Somebody sinned. Who sinned? Somebody sinned. Well, they took something from the cherem of Yericho. So what does Yehoshua do? He lines everybody up and he does what seems to be a lottery, although the word goral is never used. And ultimately, the finger points to Achan, and Achan is killed. And you know the story. The same thing happens in verse when the people ask for a king. So as we all know, Shaul, in a quiet story, ends up meeting Shmuel, and Shmuel anoints him very quietly, then in fanfare and privately. And then there's a second anointment. There's three anointments of Shaul. The second anointment takes place publicly, but Shmuel wants to demonstrate that this choice of Shaul is God's choice. So they do some sort of a lottery, and it ends up pointing to Shaul, and Shaul is nowhere to be found. And so they end up finding him. He's really hiding because he really doesn't want to be king. That's a whole story by itself. Shaul has another case like that, where Shaul is going to war against the Plishtim, and that's what we have here in source 6. And Shaul wants to know how successful they'll be, and he gets no answer from God. And he figures he got no answer from God because somebody sinned in the nation, and because of that sin, God isn't talking to him. So they put together a lottery. And he even said, and by the way, what he doesn't know is that he did know that he had issued a really ridiculous oath that day and said, cursed is anybody who eats anything today. He wanted the troops to chase the police team and not stop and eat from their bounty. He said an oath like that. He did not know that his son, Yonatan, who's his best soldier, who was very hungry, was coming through the field, and he saw a little bit of food and he tasted it and gave him a little bit of a rush. And that's the problem here. So Shaul actually says to the people, okay, you all be on one side, me and Yonatan be on the other side. Shaul's convinced it's going to fall on them. It falls on him and his son. And now he says, okay, Yonatan on one side, me on the other side. Now we have any idea what this looks like. We have no clue what this looks like. But somehow Yonatan gets nailed, and Shaul says, tell me what you did. And Yonatan says, I had a tiny little bit with the edge of my spear. Go ahead, kill me, and the people save him, and he's not killed, and happily ever after until it's not. But anyhow, what you see here is numerous cases in Tanakh where this sort of identifying the mysterious character or the proper date is done by some sort of device. We don't know the device. In some cases, it's called to go Ra'al. In some cases, not called to go Ra'al. But that's not like our case. The case of the land is really sui generis, as how it works, because it seems that the land was already apportioned in Yaakov's day. And the goral that was done by Yehoshua and Elazar to divide up the land seems to be confirming what they already knew. But what about our goral? Our goral is different than every one of these, because every one of these is about, there's one person out there, there's one date out there that we got to find. Here, it's these two things are going to serve two purposes, and the goral is going to determine which goes where. Which takes us to the second point, which is that it's called Shnei Seirei Zim, and like we pointed out, Lechatat in the singular, right? Now, is there any other place, and if you're on the daf, you know this, is there any other place where the Torah requires bringing two things, should we say two animals, besides this?
Yes.
Okay, where?
Unfortunately, you revealed it right there. Thank you.
Go ahead. Tell me.
Shtei Tziporim, Shtei Kvasim.
Okay. Where are the Shtei Tziporim? When does that happen? So the Shtei Tziporim is when a Mitzorah is healed, and then he's going to do his purification ceremony. It starts by taking two birds, and they're alive. And then you go out on the field. It's one of the four, remember I asked that question, Shir, one of the four korbanot brought outside of the Mikdash. Not a korban exactly, but it's a ceremony related to the Mikdash that happens outside. So you take one of the birds and you kill it, and then you dip the blood of the other bird, dip the other bird in the blood of the dead bird, and you send it out on the field. So you have state tziporim and the tzipor hachayah, tzipor hachat, this bird, that bird, and they're just they're separated out. Just like with our two goats, right? However, how do you separate these birds out? You pick one. There's no goral here. You just take one of the birds. The mitzorah, the next day, comes into the mikdash, and he has to bring three animals, and two of them are lambs, male lambs, shnei kvasim. And these shnei kvasim sounds like it's a team. And one of them is a nosham, one of them is an olah. They're going to end up being processed differently as that as a result. And again, the Torah says, akeves ha'echad, and akeves, the separate one. So the Torah then separates them out, just like it does with ours, right? By the way, you even find the same thing when it comes to Rosh Chodesh. I mean, the reading of Rosh Chodesh, the daily tamid. What's the daily tamid? Shnaim layom, olah tamid. And then it says, akeves ha'echad, akeves ha'sheni, which means that we might look at all of these as being of one cut, which is there. The Torah commands us to bring two things together, and whatever demands the Torah makes of any of them, it might make of all of these sets. All right. I'm gonna come in from left field because it's just such a curious thing. Ben Sorer Moreh, which you would think would have nothing to do with this, the rebellious son. The parents have to bring him to the Beit Din and have to say, this boy doesn't listen to us, and he doesn't listen to our voice, right? And they have to speak. And they have to basic process. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin records Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, which is that im lo ita imo ru'uyala aviv eno nasa ben sorer moreh, which at a simple read means, if these parents shouldn't be married, meaning if the mother is somebody the father should not have married, halachically, then you can't do ben sorer moreh. So the Gemara asks, what does that mean? My ein aru yalavi. What does that mean? Ilei machave kreito dechave mitot beitin. You think that maybe there's really a karet involved in a relationship? He married his brother's wife, or he married a married woman, or took a married woman. Sof sof avu avua ninu v'imei imei ninu. Either way, it's still the father and still the mother. In other words, why should the illicit nature of their relationship impact on the ben sor mora? Although you could certainly argue that, well, what do you expect when you marry somebody you're not supposed to? What kind of son are you going to end up with? But Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara attributes to Rabbi Yehuda something much different. Ella b'shavela aviv kamar. What does Ruyal aviv mean? It's a real twist. Ruyal aviv means somebody who is the same as the father. She's fit for the father because she's the same as the father. Tanya Namiach, and now we have a writer, Yud Omer, Im lo ita imo shava l'aviv b'kol, which is not very appealing, uve mareh, certainly not appealing, uve koma, meaning the mother and the father have to have the same kind of voice, same look, and the same height. What the heck is going on? Then eno nasa ben sor moreh. Where do you get that from? So watch what they do. Because my Tama, da amar kra, einenu shomea bekolenu. Because what do the parents have to come? They have to come and say, he won't listen to our voice. As if to say, we have a single voice. Shavin. And then the Gemara goes on to say, oh, because they have to have the same kind of voice, they must have look alike and have the same height. Where'd they get that from? Very strange. And that leads us to the very famous observation about Ben Sorer Moreh, which is well known. Keman azla hadatani Ben Sorer Moreh lo yav lo atid liot v'anichtav drosh v'kabel schar. So there is an opinion among the Tanaim. It is not the consensus, which is that Ben Sorer Moreh was never intended to actually happen. Meaning the rule of the rebellious son was purely theoretical and never did happen, never will happen. It's there for you to learn and learn the lessons you learn. And, oh, that follows Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda makes demands for this case to happen that are impossible. That the parents have to be exactly, not only they can't be lame, and they can't be blind, and they can't be amputees, and they can't be blind, all also mute or deaf. They're all sorts of requirements, but they have to be exactly the same as each other. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not sure that any man would want to marry a woman who looked exactly like him. But now, why? So what's Rebuta actually doing? Rebuta is doing is he's legislating in such a way to make Ben Sormor impossible. It's not so much that Rebuta had a tradition that the parents have to look alike, and the result of that is, okay, can't happen. It seems more from the way the Gemara speaks that Rabbi Yehuda had a tradition that Ben Sormora is something that shouldn't be happening. Therefore, he will interpret things in such a way as to make the circumstances, the criteria, impossible. But where does that all come from? So where did Rabbi Yehuda get that from? So the answer seems to be that he gets it from our Mishnah. Gets it from our Mishnah. All right, and here we go. The Mishnah says, this is our Mishnah, Shnei Sirei Yom HaKippurim, our two goats, Mitzvatan shiu shavim b'mar'eh uvekoma uvedamin uvelikichatan ke'achat. Likichatan ke'achat. That the ideal is that they should look alike, they should have the same height. Now, we're not going to talk about their voice, not a relevant thing. Uvedamin, but how much they cost. And they should be bought together. So you buy them as a team, two exactly look-alike goats, 10 bucks each, 100 bucks each, 100,000 bucks each, whatever, the same price for both. For each, and same height, same look. That's the ideal. Now, okay, but if they don't look alike, it's still kasher. If you bought one today and another tomorrow, kasher. And you have to say that because why is this Mishnah here? This Mishnah here is because remember, this Mishnah is much later than the lottery. This Mishnah is here because what happens if after the lottery, one of the animals dies? What do? So you have to get another pair or you buy another single one. So clearly, there has to be a circumstance where if you didn't buy them on the same day, it would work. So therefore, all of these desiderata are only ideals and are not vital. Okay, but now, where did they get this idea that the two seirim have to be exactly alike? All right, so we're going to take a look at it. All right, take a look at Halacha Yod. This is in the Tosefta. Shnei Sirei Yom HaKippurim Mitzvatan BeHagril. The ideal is to do the lottery. Lo Higril Alav Afilu Achik Sharin. Even if you didn't do a lottery, they're kasher. Hagrilan BeAharon Afilu Kohen Ediot Sharin. Ideally, it's the Kohen Gadol, but if not, then it's kasher. Shnei Sirei Yom HaKippurim Ad Shelo Higril Alav Rishai LeShanatan LeDavar Acher Mishugal LeEn Rishai LeShanatan LeDavar Acher. The two goats, before you did the hagrala, you could change them. Remember, we saw this in the Gemara, that you could take one of the goats and turn it into the Sa'ir L'chatat outside and get another one to be part of the team. Meaning, I bought these two goats to be the team that are going to be part of the lottery. And then I changed my mind and said, one of those goats should go somewhere else, and I'm going to buy another one and take the place. I could do that. Okay, good. So that's the setup. I want to take you back to the fourth parak, where the lottery takes place. I'm going to show you something that we did, but we never didn't pay much attention to. I didn't pay much or point out something that's very strange here. Taraf Bekalpi, what would the Kohen Gadol do? He would reach into the box and he would mix his hands around, right? So that it wouldn't be like he's deliberately grabbing one. Why? Why do we care which one he grabs? We'll see. Ve'alashnei goralot, he would bring up two goralot, echad katub alav lashem, so they are written on them, Lashem and Lashazel. Im Shalashem Allah Bimino is the Mishnah. If the right hand grabbed the one Shalashem, Hasgano Mer Ishiko, the Hasgano standing to his right, said, Ishi Kohen Gadol Hagbei Mincha. He would say, Mr. Kohen Gadol, sir, your excellency, please raise your right hand. Misgavo Allah, if it came up in the left hand, Rosh Beit Avo Merlo, his third, shall we say, says, Ishi Kohen Gadol Hagei Atzmocha, lift up your left hand. In other words, you always lift up Lashem. Netanam al shnei sirim v'omer Lashem chatat. Now, you would put them on the two sirim, meaning you'd put the right one on whichever sair was to your right, and the left one on whichever sair was to your left, which means which sair goes Lazazel? You don't know till he reaches his hands and pulls it out. If his right hand says Lashem, then the goat on the right goes Lashem. Okay, fine. That's what a goral is. Okay, all right, now, here we have the beginning of something strange. Taraf Bekalpi, this is the Tosefta, source 18. Taraf Bekalpi ve'alashnei goralot. Again, he would go in, mix his hands together, and take up the two goralot. Now watch this. Im bimino Allah, if the right hand had Lashem, how you call Yisrael smechim. The first time we hear about this. If the right hand came out with Lashem, everybody was happy. Im mismola Allah, it's an interesting take, if the left hand had Lashem, lo how you call Yisrael smechim. The Tosefta doesn't want to say everybody was sad. It just says they weren't happy. Why would we be happy if the right hand is Lashem or the left hand is Lashem? Who cares? It's a very strange thing. So before going further, I want to now recap. We have a number of questions here. We saw the notion of a goral, sometimes by the word goral, sometimes without the word goral, as being employed throughout the Tanakh, always to mark out one thing among many, the one person among many, in one case, the one date among many. Parenthetically, I don't know if you saw, but with Yonah and with Haman, the verb was lipol, to fall. If you look back here, the verb used is Allah, to go up. The goral here goes up. So there's something already telling us it's a little bit different. The second thing is that the two goats, besides being defined by their goral, also are called Shnei. And we'll see the Gemara in a minute why. Why we read that in the Pasuk. That the two of them have to be alike. Now, that doesn't apply to anything else with the goral. It can't. What are we going to say? All 12 parts of Eretz Yisrael should look exactly alike and then do a goral? Doesn't make any sense. All people should be equally guilty as Yonah and then do a goral? Doesn't make any sense. But here, that we say that the two have to be exactly alike. And we found other things that have to be alike, but they get defined just by choice. I'll take this bird, I'll take that lamb, not a goral. So what is it about these two Seirim that have both contexts overlap on them of the Shnaim and the goral? And that's what I want to take a look at. Okay. The Tosefta here expands on... Shalom Rabbi Akiva. Continue with this. Ma'un Shana told me smoli yamin. Can you just switch hands? Now think about how much cheating that is. You reached in and your right hand came with Azazel, your left hand came with small. Can you switch hands? If you can switch hands, then what's the point of a goral? Amar lahem, al titnu makom laminim ledot achreichem. Now this is a very interesting answer. Rabbi Akiva says, don't give the minim, the heretics, whoever that might be, reason to start poking fun at us. What is it? So the commentaries generally say that what happens is that the heretics would say, you guys have all sorts of legal fictions and all sorts of end-arounds, so this is going to be another end-around. You didn't get what you wanted, you switch hands. Sounds like Rabbi Kiva seems to say, like, theoretically there'd be a way to do it, but it would create a problem with the PR of Torah, right? Rabbi Yehuda Omar Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. Haskan v'koin gadol moshevin shtei yiminehen ka'achad. He had a different opinion. We have the koin gadol putting both hands in. He says, no, the skan and the koin gadol put both their right hands in. Im b'mirosho koin gadol lo haskan omer lo ishi koin gadol agbeha yiminecha. If the koin gadol ended up in his right hand with Lashem, which means the skan had Lazazel, the skan said to him, you lift up your hand, Mr. Sir Excellency. Im b'mirosho skan Allah rosh beitav omer lo haskan davar me'elach, right? And if the skan ended up with it, we wouldn't have the coin gadol say, lift it up. It's kind of degrading and upsetting. So the third guy would say, okay, you raise it. Etc. Okay, now, again, we're trying to figure out what's going on here. So first things first, let's look back here. Well, actually, I'm going to cut to the chase a little bit, right? Two goats. Now, let's stop and think what Yom Kippur is all about. What is Yom Kippur all about?
Kapara.
Kapara for?
For Bnei Yisrael.
Good.
For the calling, for his family.
Right. So it starts out, and the core piece in Yom Kippur is kapara for the mikdash. V'chiper al mikdash hakodesh, v'omoyed, etc. It's going to be mechaper on all of those things, but also for all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, by the way, what happens if that's not accomplished? What happens if the mikdash is not cleansed? What happens if there's tuma in the camp that's never gotten rid of? What's the result? So we say that.
The Kohen Gadol, I was just going to say, if there's a tumor that's there, the Kohen Gadol is unable to perform his duties.
Right, but now we're talking about tumah in a more metaphysical sense of saying, meaning there's tumah that happened because people came in tameh and they weren't aware of it. We have to do this once a year. Let's say the Kohen Gadol doesn't do it. Let's say there's a year goes by, 2 years go by, no Yom Kippur. So what happens? Now there's tumah. If there's tuma, what is now threatened if there's tuma? So even though it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is HaShochein Itam Betoch Tumotam, Tumatam, God resides with them among the tuma, but how long is that going to last? We created a Mishkan. God commanded us to create a Mishkan for what purpose? V'shachanti Betocham, so God should dwell among us. If we don't maintain the Torah of the Mishkan, ultimately we lose that.
Although on Pesach,
yeah,
if Rovam is Tameh, they still could bring Korban Pesach.
Ah, very good. Exactly. So Korban Pesach, and by the way, Korban Tamid also trumps Tumah, so that if Rov Kohanim and Rovam are Tameh, we still go ahead and do it. Very good, Sherwin. But still, on a more metaphysical level, what's happening to the Mishkan? Now, I'm not talking about a case where we cannot make it Tahor. Talk about a case where we choose not to, or we flub it up. Notice the insistence on getting everything right here. Think about the oath that's administered to the Kohen Gadol that we saw at the end of the first Kippur. It causes such trauma. And the reason is because the Tzadokim had a slightly different method of doing the Ktoret. They would put the Ktoret into the censer before walking in. So they'd walk in and it was already smoking. And we say you have to do it inside. So such a kpedah, because it has to be exactly right. This is the Kodesh Kedoshim. And what's the threat that looms behind that curtain, if we don't do it right, is a loss of the Shekhinah. A loss of the Shekhinah carries with it perhaps other things we're going to see. Although as if that weren't enough. All right, so I'm going to take you away from Vayikra. I don't want to take you to the Bereishit. Let's take a look at Sefer Bereishit. Now, just for fun, where are the first famous camels that show up in Bereishit? The first famous camels that show up in there. Camels that show up in Bereishit already in Perek Yod.
Elazar brought to the well.
Exactly. The slave brought 10 camels, and Rivka rode on a camel, and she fell off the camel. The camel story is important. Exactly. Very good. Okay. Where is the first famous, again, Avram got all these things from Paro and Mitzrayim. I don't count that. Where's the first famous donkey story in Bereishit?
The Akedah.
The Akedah, right. Where's the first famous ram story? That's a dead giveaway. Okay, that's the Akedah. Where's the first famous sheep, meaning flock, story in Bereishit?
Light.
Lot and Avram, then the problem that led to Sodom and all of that. Okay, very good. I'm not going to ask where the first pig story is because that was just when Esav wanted to eat like a pig. Anyhow, but where is, okay, that was bad. Well, where is the first goat story? All right, don't answer yet. We're going to see. I want to bring it up. I want to put it in the back of your minds, the first goat story. Okay, now, source 19 is the story of Rivka. Rivka is finally gets pregnant after 20 years, and she doesn't know that she has twins, but the twins are running around, wrestling around, whatever it is inside of her. And she says, I don't know, Lama Zanochi has a lot of different interpretations. Why do I have such a difficult pregnancy? Why do I even want to get pregnant? Why am I alive? Lots of, right, why did I pray for this? She goes to seek out God, which either means she goes to actually pray to God, or else she goes to a Navi. Machloket Rishonim. So God told her, or God told her through this intermediary, now based on our reading of the word shnei in shnei seirezim and shnei kvasim and Shtei Tziporim. What should that tell you about these two kids? Shnei goyim evinech. You have two nations in your belly. Shnei lumim, and two peoples will separate from your
womb. They should be alike.
They should be alike, right? Exactly. Right? It should be like, and you would think twins, for the most part, are going to be not identical. It's still somewhat similar. Okay? Doesn't happen. But watch what happens here. She the time to give birth, and she has twins. Twins, perfect for what I'm talking about. Shnei. The first one comes out hairy, ruddy skin, and hairy, like he has a cloak of what? Hair, a cloak of hair. By the way, what's his name?
Esav.
What does Esav mean? Simply, well done. He came out well done. Asui. All right. Now, keep going. Who came out second? His brother. I want to get you to get the picture. And this, by the way, is a weird image. Weird image. The younger one is coming out. We don't find this with Peretz and Zerach. We find other weird stuff with them. And he's holding on to Esav's heel. Very strange. Keep that image in mind because we're going to come back to it. And so they call him Yaakov. He's going to hang on to the heel. Right? And now what happens? So right away, all we heard about Esav is that he's hairy. You don't hear what Yaakov looks like. But we do find Yaakov hanging on to the heel of Esav. They grow up. What kind of person is Esav? An outdoorsman. He's a man of the field, which means a farmer, and your dad say he's a hunter. Which according to the Rishonim means simply he was a shepherd, somebody who sits in tents, right? Which means, by the way, they're going back to the Cain and Hevel split of farmer shepherd thing. It goes through operation. All right, very good. So that's who they are. Now, this is now after time. Right, he's blind. It's getting hard for him to see. Vayikrat Esav b'no hagadol. He calls Esav. Vayomer elav b'ni vayomer elav hineni. Beautiful. By the way, Esav's very loyal to his father. Hineni zakati lo yadati yom moti. You're waiting. We're still, the first goat's coming, right? I'm old. I don't know. It means that I think I'm about to die. Ata sana chelacha tal yecha v'kashdecha. Take your weapons, etc. V'tzei asadat v'tzura litzai. Go back out to the field and hunt. This puts Esav's two realms of livelihood together, the Tzayid and the Sadeh. Vaseli matamim. Now, by the way, how many animals do we expect Esav to catch?
At least two, plural, matamim.
Maybe, but Sudali Tzayid. Could be either way, right? I mean, Yitzchak's going to eat two, I don't know. Vaseli matamim. We assume he's going to hunt some wild animal, maybe venison. And make it sweet, you know, cook it up. Kasher hafti, like, you don't like it because you feed me regularly. Why that's the case is a whole piece on what that's about, why it is that Yitzchak needs us to give him the bracha. Rivka shomadu Yitzchak al Esav mino. So Rivka overhears this. Where does Esav go? Out to the field. I want you to get the image and don't forget Yaakov holding on to Esav's heel. Rivka amra al Yaakov ben Alimor. Rivka now says to Yaakov, Hine shamat to the Bicham there al Asav Echich Alimor, Avia Litzayid Vasadim Atamim Vochela, Rachal Vin Adonai Vin Vin. She quotes, with slight changes, what Yitzchak said to Esav. V'atav v'nishma v'kuli, Lashoni mitzvatach. Now, your father told your brother what to do. I'm telling you what to do. Your brother followed what your father said. You follow what I said. Lechna el Hatzon. Go to the flock. V'kach li misham. Get this, Shnei Gdaye Izim Tovim, two good goats. Gdaye Izim. Veseotam matamim la'avicha kasher ahev. And I will make them as matamim for your father the way he likes. Now, by the way, important to note, at this point, there is no implication of deception. There's a side note about the story. Rivka's take on it seems to be, hey, it's bracha day. So Esav's going to bring your father some good food. You bring him some good food also. And the idea is that you'd walk in and say, hi, I'm Yaakov. I got some good food too at this point. But the idea is that he's going to go get two goats, which are going to take the place of one animal of Esau's. Maybe. He'll give it to you. He'll give you the bracha. And what does Yaakov say as his first protest? By the way, he never protests saying it's not right. That's another problem. My brother is a hairy boy. I'm a hairy man. Sa'ir, goat. And now we find out that Yaakov is not so hairy. That's the first we find out about it. Okay, very good. The Midrash on this passage, when it talks about Shnei Gdaye Izim Tovim, two good goats. Amar Rabbi Levi, source 21. Im Matzata Hare Mutavim Lav Haveli Mipyon Shali. Right, if you can find them in the flock, fine. If not, get them from my own holdings. All right. Shekach Katav LaShu Malala Shnei Gdayim B'chol Yom. That Yitzchak wrote in the Ketubah that he's going to give her two Gdayim every day. And so that's part of my holdings. Okay. What is Tovim? Rabbi Chelmo Amar Tovim Lacha. I don't tell the brachot. These goats are good for you. They're good for you because that's how you're going to get the brachot. Betovim levanecha. They're also good for your children. Through these two goats, or through two goats, you're going to get a kapara. Okay, now I'm not making any claims about Rivka knew. But Chazal here are clearly tying in the two goats of Yom Kippur to the two goats that Rivka brought for, had Yaakov bring her, and then she paired so Yaakov could get the brachot. Okay, now we got a further mystery here. Now, notice that in the story of Yaakov and Esav, the word lishloach appears throughout. When Yitzchak sends Yaakov to Padan Aram to marry a daughter and to get away from Esav, vayishlach. Esav sees that he sent them away. When Yaakov comes back, by Yishlach, they will parsha call that. By Yishlach Yaakov Malachim. All right, and he sends Malachim to where? Artsas Seir. Again, Seir, and that's where Esav lives, the land of Seir in southwest Jordan. All right, and now we get to the defining moment of Yaakov's life. I want to step back for a moment. What was the defining moment in Avraham's life? The moment, the single moment where it all crystallized. What do you think?
Seems to be
Akedat Yitzchak. That seems to be the peak of his career. The Akedah, from a very different perspective, is the defining moment for Yitzchak, but defining it in a very different way. But what is the defining moment in Yaakov's life? So I can hear two arguments. I can hear an argument for Beit El when he has the dream and he sees the Sulam. But I think far more defining for Yaakov is when he's on his way back and he has the wrestling match. Right? But whether or not you accept that it's the defining moment for Yaakov or not, let's read the wrestling match. Right? So Yaakov is alone and some guy comes up and wrestles with him till morning. And he sees that he can't beat him. So who can't beat whom? The guy sees that he can't beat Yaakov. He reaches over and pulls the sciatic nerve. But take a kafierech Yaakov, so gets dislodged. All right, by the way, I want you to remember who does this guy turn out to be? It turns out to be not a guy, but some sort of divinity. We know that because he knows things about Yaakov and he speaks in God's name, right? Okay, we got that. And Yaakov afterwards says, I'm calling the place Penuel because I saw God face to face and I lived. So we know that there's some sort of an angel. And Chazal say, whose angel is it?
Esav's angel.
It's either Esav's angel, like some say, who's coming to try to defeat Yaakov in advance, or it's Sarosh al Esav who's sent to show Yaakov that he could beat Esav, he shouldn't be so afraid. It's something of that court type. I want you to remember, how was Yaakov born? He came out doing what?
Holding on
to
the
foot of Esau. Now what happens? Full circle. The malach now is grabbing onto the foot, the leg of Yaakov, and wrenches it. Okay, so there's a full circle. Again, pointing out how momentous this second is. And now, Vayomer Shalacheini. What does the guy say to Yaakov? Send me away. Ki Allah Shachar. It's morning, however we interpret that. Vayomer Lo Ashalecha Kim Berachtani. I won't send you away unless you bless me. Okay. And then what's your name? Your name is Yaakov. My name is Yaakov. No, you won't be called Yaakov. You'll be called Yisrael because you're able to stand up against God and man and hold your own. And Yaakov says to him, what's your name? And he says, well, he asked my name and he gives him a bracha. And Yaakov calls the place Penuel because he saw God face to face and he's alive. And as he comes to Penuel, he's limping. And then the final statement, therefore, B'nai Yisrael do not eat Gidon Asher. By the way, which hindquarters is also? On an animal, as the Gidon Asher. So it's machloket, sugin chulin, either both, or just the right one. Because the assumption is that he reached behind and grabbed the right one of Yaakov. Okay? Keep that in mind. This notion that the malach, Sarosh Esav, reached around and grabbed the right side of Yaakov. All right.
Even though it says nothing of the sort. It
says nothing of the sort. Just because it's hayarech, the idea is it's one, and hamiyumenet shibayarech. Always, they favor the right side and everything. We're going to come back to that. Okay. Last two statements, which are matched, although they're an amud away from each other. We already saw this. But these two statements, and then we're going to bring it all together. It's like I've put together a lot of bricks, and at this point, you can't see the building. I'm doing that on purpose. We're going to put the building together. Tana Rabbanan, we have a braita. This is Agadah. Arba'im shana shishimesh Shimon HaTzadik. The 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. That's the Shimon HaTzadik with the story with Alexander, and you know that goes back to the beginning of the Greek period. Hayag goral oleb biyamin. All 40 years, Lashem always came up in the right hand, and Lazazel always in the left hand. Mikan va'elech, after that, pamim oleb biyamin, pamim oleb bismol. Sometimes it came right hand, sometimes it came left hand. And again, I got to ask, who cares? Like, why is that so important? That it be the right hand, the left hand? Why are we reading so much into it? And now we have the opposite piece of the picture, the other end of the spectrum. Tana Rabbanan, Arba'im Shana Kodem Chorban HaBayit. For the last 40 years before the destruction. So we talked about the first 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik, which are not the first 40 years of the Second Temple, at the beginning of the Greek period. And now the last 40 years, from the year 30 till 70, we'll call it. Lo Haya Goral Oleb Yamin. It never came up in the right hand. And not only that, Velo Haya Lashon Shel Zorit Malbin. The strip wouldn't go white that they put up. They told them that they'd been forgiven. And the Western candle didn't stay lit longer than the others. All the nisim that happened, they stopped happening. And this is the critical one. The doors of the Beit HaMikdash would open up on their own without the coin opening. Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai. So Yochum and Zakkai, who was one of the heads of the Sanhedrin at the end of the time of the Mikdash, yells at the doors. Why are you scaring yourself? I know you're going to be destroyed. But it's, in other words, it's like, why are you making it more inviting for the enemy? So clearly this opening the door thing was like an invitation to the enemy and sort of like a statement of we're on our way out. What's going on here? Got to put all this stuff together. So let's go back to what I think is the key passage in this whole thing. Rivka is pregnant. Remember, Torah is telling us, Shnei Sirei Yizim, it's speaking to us in a language that we know, and it's speaking to our history. Many commentators point out that the par that the Kohen Gadol brings is somehow evocative of the Egel, because Aaron was involved with the Egel. That the Ayil is connected to the Ayil that was brought in Har HaMoriah. And it's Chazal connect Korbanot with where they played out in history. So I just want to take that one step further. Rivka is pregnant, and turns out she's got twins, and the twins are wrestling around. Now, what does it mean that Yaakov's grabbing onto Esav's heel? It could mean several things. It could mean that Yaakov is hitching a ride and he's going to ride on Esav's coattails. It could also mean that Yaakov is really trying to get out first. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I'm not talking on anything neonatal. I'm talking on a symbolic level. But what determines who's going to be Esav and who's going to be Yaakov? How do we know what's going to be? So Yaakov comes out holding on to Esav's heel, but that comes full circle later on in his life when Saroshal Esav grabs onto his leg. It can go this way. It can go that way. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu command Bnei Yisrael to do? The Kohen Gadol has to bring his own parva'il. What does he command Bnei Yisrael to do? You have to provide shnei seirim, and ideally, they should look alike. And what are they called? They're called, they pointed it out, they're called lechatat. Shem Shem Farl Hirsch points out, they're not lechataot, they're chatat. In other words, they are one single unit. One single unit of chatat. Two seirim. But they're not going to end up in the same place, because what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Rivka? Shnei goyim evinechu, shnei lumim echi paredu, ulo'om milo'om yamatz. They're going to separate, they're going to tussle with each other, they're going to go very differently. They're going to go in different ways. Okay? So I'm going to posit that the shnei seirim are Yaakov and Esav. And we find it when Yaakov brings shnei seirim in order to supplant Esav, who is an ish sa'ir. And what does Esav consistently, what does Yaakov consistently do with Esav? Vayishlach. And what does Esav ask of Yaakov? Shalcheini. And by the way, please take a look at source one. What do we do with the Sa'ir Lazazel? L'shalach oto Lazazel hamibara. We send the Sa'ir Lazazel out, away, Esav's territory. The two goats are Yaakov and Esav. Now, my right hand, I want that to be, that's Yaakov. Yaakov is the one holding on to Esav's heel with his right hand. That's what we picture. My right hand is Yaakov. I want Yaakov to be Lashem, and the left hand be Lazazel, and send Esav far away. All of Am Yisrael is happy when they see that Yaakov's name, Ki'ilu, comes up in the right hand, and Esav's name, Ki'ilu, comes in the left hand. Why? Because we want Esav far away, we want Yaakov here. Because if Yaakov's here, that means the Shekhinah's here. And if the Shekhinah's here, that means more than anything else, we're protected. The Shekhinah's among us. Who's going to hurt us? And so what do we hear during the first 40 years of the 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik? It always came up in the right hand. What happened during the last 40 years before the Churban? It always came up in the left hand. What does that mean? Now Esav's on the inside and Yaakov's on the outside. And therefore the doors are opening up and letting him in. And by the way, who ends up coming in after those 40 years? This is the second temple. Who ends up coming in?
Romans.
And who are the Romans in the Midrash? Esav.
Esav, yeah, but Esav.
Right. And so the way that Chazal look at this whole Goral is to say the Shnei Seirim are indeed a unit. They're a unit like the two birds, and they're a unit like the two lambs, and they're a unit like the parents, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of Ben Sor Mora, but they're a unit in a different way. In those cases, they are a matched pair. This is a single unit. There's a single embryo, if you will, that's split. And it's a single chatat. And the goral, call it fate, determines which one's going to go here and which one's going to go there. But a goral is not fate. It wasn't fate that determined that Yonah was going to have the thing fall on him or that Achan. It was identifying the reality. So the goral identifies the reality. This year, you guys are on the inside, Esav's on the outside. When after Shem HaTzadik passed away, sometimes it was opposite, but for a year. But finally, when for 40 years it was Esav on the inside, the doors of the Beit HaMikdash opened up and let the enemy in, and the enemy is Esav.
If you can say it from a different perspective, you could say that from our perspective, a goral is a goral. But from the perspective of Kadosh Baruch Hu, a goral is doing his will.
Well, very good. Okay, good. and it's identifying.
Yeah.
The goral doesn't happen because, and the Midrash is saying that, the goral doesn't happen because it just happened to fall out that way. It's like Sherwin says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, right now you're no longer worthy, but maybe this year not worthy, and then next year you'll be worthy. When for 40 years in a row you're not worthy, then you're finished. Because what's 40 years? 40 years is an entire generation. So when for 40 years you're not worthy, then the doors open up for Esav. Esav comes in, and Yaakov is indeed sent out to the desert. So just a different way of looking at that entire sugya. And there's probably more stuff there, but if you come up with any other observations, please let me know. And again, reminder that tomorrow's shiur will be in the afternoon on Zoom, not in shul. Hold on 1 second.